everyone. Welcome to the Coaches on the Run podcast.
This is Alex.
And Alyssa.
We're both full-time coaches, and we're here to answer your common and not-so-common trail and ultra questions.
My name is Jordan Marie Brings, Three White Horses Daniel. I am Kuichasha Lakota, a citizen of Kuichasha Oyate, the Lorville Indian Reservation. I'm an outreach and project manager with UCLA, the founder and executive director of Rising Hearts. I am a filmmaker. I am a community organizer and heart work and a professional athlete.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We're very excited to chat with you. So first of all, how did you become a professional athlete and get into ultra running?
That is a good question. And one of my favorite things to speak about is I am a fourth generation runner. And so running is in my family. It's in my blood. It's an opportunity to carry on tradition and a legacy while also, you know, representing Native athletes in our communities and being able to have a platform to increase our presence in this running community and in the world. And more recently, in the last few years, I have been turning more to trail running and testing out, you know, how far I want to run. Predominantly, I was 5K, 10K, mile, half mile. But ever since I graduated college, I've been finding that my body tends to like the longer the distance, the better. The endurance is there, even though mentally I might not be fully into it. But at the end of the run or at the end of the day, it's something that I always really love and appreciate. I've just been doing marathons. I just did my first 30 miler a week and a half ago on Thanksgiving. And so that's a distance I definitely like and appreciate. So I'm really excited looking ahead and forward as to, you know, races to come for next year, trying that distance out. And so, yeah, it just gives me a better connection to my surroundings and to who I am and being able to honor, you know, my ancestors, be able to reflect on the past and be able to look ahead to the future for our next generations.
So I followed you for a while, Jordan, but that was actually what prompted me to reach out to you is that 30-mile run. And I love how you've used your running as a channel for activism and discussions, and a lot of your runs are, you know, prayer runs. And I guess maybe if you could speak a little bit more to what those runs might be for you, if that's okay, and what experiences you have with them.
Yeah, I mean, before I intersected advocacy with running, you know, running was a way for representation and to push myself to reach for my goals and the aspirations that I have and the dreams that I have in terms of running on a competitive platform. But it came down to a point in my life in 2016 when I was asked to organize some sort of event to welcome the Standing Rock youth who were running over 2,000 miles from Standing Rock to Washington, D.C. to oppose the Dakota Access Pipeline. That's where I started to see running as a platform to have these discussions. I've seen it happen with other runners and voices, but I felt like some of those issues were kind of always obvious, either whether it's doping or the sexism that exists or some other issues. I really saw this as a way to advocate for Indigenous peoples, for marginalized peoples, for the BIPOC community, of what we experience on the day-to-day, what is happening in our communities that the rest of the world should know about. And so that's what began this long journey, this 4.5-year journey of learning to intersect running and advocacy. And it hasn't been until recently, the 2019 Boston Marathon, where I intersected advocacy and running on a competitive platform. Because prior to that, I had been running in prayer vigils before and participating in those or helping to raise awareness about those doing it for like Bears Ears. And some other initiatives, but I had never thought to bring it on a competitive sense because I was like, well, that's mine. That's something for me. But in 2019, just with the lack of visibility and support for the families who have lost a loved one due to the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous relatives and the advocates and those doing this heart work every single day to end this injustice, felt like it wasn't getting the support it needed. And that's where I just felt fed up and was like, you know what, I'm going to bring this into my own platform. I don't care about running a fast time. I don't care about what people think or how this looks. Like, this is my way to be able to give back to our relatives, to the family members that, you know, our family has lost due to this epidemic, and to just give visibility to those that haven't seen the spotlight or received any attention and has been invisible to, you know, mainstream media when it shouldn't be. And that's what inspired me to dedicate 26 miles in prayer to 26 missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And so now it's just a lifelong commitment that I'm dedicating my running platform to, you know, every race that I get, any prayer run.
That's incredible. I'm blown away by that, of it, really important work. But what does heart work mean? So I saw that your other platform is called Rising Hearts. Yep. And so I'd really love to hear what you mean by heart work. That's not a term that I actually know very well.
Yeah, it's a term not a whole lot of people know very well. And I feel like it's one that is really used by community organizers, by grassroots folks that are rooted in community and are inspired constantly by their community and the work that they do and their devotion to wanting a better future. So I first heard of this term, this word, from some sisters in a fellowship society that I am a member of right now, with Return to the Heart Foundation. And they were just speaking to the heart work, that this is what encapsulates what we do, why we do it, and who we do it for. This is what motivates us to continue this hard work, and to reframe, at least for me, our way of thinking, and rather than calling it the stressful work, the hard work, yeah, that all, you know, is included. But calling it the heart work is really, you know, for me, what motivates me to get out the door, what motivates me to basically work two full-time jobs simultaneously and, you know, wanting a better future for our relatives and for all of our communities.
I really love your honesty and your work ethic to do that, because I do think that that's not just a commitment within your running as a professional career, but now it's this full-time, you know, paperwork and interviews and discussions that probably aren't very comfortable or fun. And that's its own emotional journey as well as just a huge time commitment. So that's really inspiring. How do you think other people could use running, I guess, as a vehicle for more difficult conversations and movements that need to happen?
I mean, running platforms, any other platform, whatever it is, big or small, is an opportunity to give visibility to the things that we're passionate about, the things that we want to see improved and better and visible, and for solutions to be developed, for policies or legislation to be created. You know, all of these mechanisms are pathways to a better future. And I think any platform can serve as that method, as that pathway. But for me, running has been part of my life. So that's the way that I'm able to do this work and share what's important to me. You know, it's not always about sharing the hardships, you know, the hard stuff that's happening in our communities. But I also use it to uplift and share the amazing resilience that we have in our communities, the strength and beauty and love and that perseverance to keep going every single day, even when we're fighting against all sorts of systems that have continuously oppressed us and has continuously erased us, as part of, you know, dismantling and unlearning and relearning and rebuilding towards that better future for everyone that, you know, is intersectional across all movements, that finally, you know, I won't have to keep listing Indigenous, Black, Brown, Asian, Muslim, Two-Spirit, LGBTQ, non-binary people with disabilities until the day in the future comes where we have a seat at the table and we are equal, that we are supported and seen and visibly heard and respected. Then I'm not going to list all of the many groups that have been continuously oppressed and has experienced racism and white supremacy, and systems of oppression. So that's what motivates me to do it. That's what serves my running, and simultaneously my running serves these causes. And so anyone can use their platform, whether it's basketball, biking, whatever it is. And I know lots of people will say, leave politics out of the sports or whatever, but that's been happening forever, where people have been bringing these issues into the spotlight through their running to try and talk about this, to try and influence change. And I think it has such an incredible opportunity for that ripple effect, where it inspires one other person, and that one other person can inspire five other people, and then it just creates this amazing, beautiful ripple effect of social change. And through prayer running for me and using advocacy to talk about these things, it inspired Rosalie Fish, who is a little sister of mine, and she was inspired by my Boston prayer run and reached out and asked to do the same thing for her state meet. And she elevated, you know, running as advocacy for MMIW to even higher platform. And it was just so beautiful and amazing to watch and see that inspiration that she said she felt by me. But then again, I was being inspired by her, which kept motivating me to keep trying harder and to keep doing more and trying to find other ways to make things better and to collaborate more. So we just have that really incredible bond and relationship that I think is happening a lot more now, especially in 2020 with racism and all of these injustices clearly visible, which didn't just pop up. They've always been present. But now that there's a magnifying glass on it and they're visible to everybody, we're starting to see the people wanting to become allies, wanting to do better, wanting to learn, to unlearn and relearn, and how to be allies and relatives in these movements. That's part of that ripple effect of change. And it's slowly happening. It's slowly moving and growing, which is great. But it's all part of that heart work every day.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful. And I think anyone who can say to keep politics out of running is showing how privileged they are that it can be that way for them. You know, whether we're talking about women's health or, you know, Indigenous health or Black health, it's running is not a sport, or any sport, I don't think at this point, can be non-political. So,
yeah, exactly.
I think that's, you know, I shared this morning in another conversation we had with my really good friend Latoya that mm-hmm. I always thought, because I grew up in areas where I was a minority, and, you know, I grew up in New Mexico and most of my friends were either Native or Hispanic origin. And I just assumed that I had no, you know, I was not at all racist. And all of a sudden I started having really heavy conversations with people that were family and friends. And while I realized my life experiences had shaped me to be a certain way, unfortunately, some of those conversations were really uncomfortable. And it was unfortunate for me to realize that I was living in a little bit of a privileged bubble, even mm-hmm. though I thought I had done work. And so I think people like you who are challenging others to step up to the plate, it's an amazing work. But I do think, you know, that work needs to be compensated and helped, and it can't be done just by people, you know, BIPOC people on their own. So I think that's an important conversation, and we're really grateful that you're willing to like have that with us.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm curious, you're saying like there's the prayer run and it's influencing other people to take on prayer runs. What is your mental state when you're in that? Because I know oftentimes, you know, when you're playing for a team, you can do things that are greater than yourself. You can almost elevate to reach a level that you couldn't reach on your own. Or is it that the weight of why you're doing the run, it actually makes it more challenging? I'd love to hear that mental state, or maybe that mental aspect of a prayer run that might not be in another run, or maybe you can't separate that.
Yeah, prayer running is definitely different because there is the emotional aspect to it, which is something that I'm still learning to navigate, and how to manage the emotions that come from it. Because for me, prayer running, and this is something that I'm not going to, you know, advise to everybody. It's not for everybody. This is what I do. This is because also running is culturally traditional to so many Indigenous communities, that for me, when I'm finding their names, I have to do the research, because there are those that have had visibility to their story and what happened to them that have made national headlines, but there are thousands more that have never seen that attention and have had that support before. So for me, I want to find those that have not, you know, been talked about. And, you know, it's doing the research of finding them and reading the articles, reading the information and details about specifically what happened to them. So normal running, when I'm ready to compete, I go into the race with a clear head, excited, motivated, determined. But with prayer running, I'm emotionally exhausted going into a race. So that's something I'm having to now newly navigate, because it has, you know, affected my competitive running. It's affected, the workouts go great, everything goes great. But when I am devoted and committed to running in prayer and having that space be intentional for others and not myself, it has impacted the way I compete and the ability to run fast, because I am sitting with that emotional heaviness, and those thoughts and the details and the statistics and just the injustices there, and being an empath and being emotionally, you know, sensitive person, this is something that sits with me really heavily. So it's something that I'm learning to deal with, but yeah, it's having to do the research to find them, to learn what happened to them, to have to go into that race setting, already emotionally, you know, exhausted and sad and heartbroken, and depressed. And over time, over 2019, after every single race, it got down to the end of the year where I was just so burnt out and so heartbroken and depressed. I had experienced anxiety, panic attacks, insomnia, nightmares, couldn't hang out with anybody. I was just only going to work, but it was really hard for me to want to get out of bed. And the only thing I wanted to keep doing was to keep running, because if I wasn't running, I wasn't able to honor them and remember them. And for every prayer for them is to be able to say their name out loud into the universe, for, you know, the universe to be, to hear it, to hear their name, and to offer prayers for their, for them, for their family, so that they can have healing and justice, and hopefully they can move life and not forget them, but be able to move forward because they have justice and answers, to pray for the community. And it happens with every single mile for a new person. So it's really hard. And having the red handprint that symbolizes the violence that is silencing our relatives' voices, is really heavy. And it literally feels like this weight as soon as it's on and I'm getting my mind focused and my energy focused, it literally feels like this heavy, depressive, sad weight put on me. So yeah, moving forward, I don't know what running is going to look like, but I'm figuring it out with like therapy and just learning new ways to try and maybe advocate so it's not wearing on me mentally and my mental health. But yeah, it's something that I'm still healing from and just learning how to do it better, in the future.
And something I've seen a lot of this year is kind of that performative allyship and companies jumping on with a token bandwagon of a one-time post or something. And that's been really called out this year. But I guess moving more towards the positive side of that is, what do you see companies that are doing things right or making progress, and where do you see, like, where, what, I guess, what would your hopes be for the athletic sport industry on that side of it?
Yeah, I mean, it always has to come down to an injustice, a heartbreaking, you know, theft and death of somebody for national outcry to finally see it and to do something and to want to commit to being better. We've seen it time and time again, but for me, I am cautiously always optimistic. While it's great and exciting to see that, I look at sustainability and consistency in our movements and in the fight for justice and in the fight for intersectionality. So while it's great, I love having these conversations with companies that are asking me to be help consult on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts and what can be done in the running community to help make it more safe and more inclusive, especially for BIPOC athletes and voices. You know, I am very honest in my suggestions and advice and the recommendations of those that I always, you know, will try and get them to reach out to and listen to. But I see hope. I always, you know, hang on to hope. You know, I feel like I have to for our next generations because that's what so many of us are doing. Whether you're in the Indigenous community or not, we are fighting for a better future. So I am hopeful. I am seeing the commitment to doing better. It just comes down to consistency. If they're still going to be here just as passionate, just as focused and committed a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. And if those policies that they're wanting to implement or create will actually be truly reflective to the suggestions of those that they're seeking the advice from, which are a lot of the time coming from the BIPOC community. So I do have hope. I do see change happening. I just hope that it continues the way it has.
I agree. And I truly hope that there are being significant changes that are lasting and it's not just a one and done or just a token offer. Yeah, for sure.
We don't need anything tokenized. We don't need anybody feeling tokenized, which I have felt time and time again in so many different spaces. So many BIPOC voices have shared similar sentiments and experiences of, you know, their lived experiences being exploited and their, you know, their expertise by some of these companies and or people and individuals, you know, kind of taking their experience and never crediting for it or compensating them for their time, but quickly looking to us as the experts because we come from these communities where these injustices are happening. But only, you know, using us for that instance to try and help make their policies better or their outlook or approach better, but never building long-lasting collaborations and partnerships to continue that because we're always learning. Things are always changing. But we need to be part of those conversations all the time, not just a one-time thing to help improve their hiring policy or their DE&I efforts or their ambassadorship programs or whatever. We need to make sure that we always have a seat at the table and that our voices can be heard.
Definitely. So switching gears just a little bit, how has COVID impacted your running and also your community? I did see a post about how tight-knit your community is and how challenging that must be not to be able to live in that lifestyle and that history.
Yeah, COVID has impacted everything. I mean, I haven't raced at all this year, but at the same time too, because of all the running I did last year, I ran into a lot of injuries. So I'm kind of using this year as to rebuild and get healthy, which is great. But it's impacted me in a way that I can't go home and be with my relatives, especially in South Dakota, because I do not want to put them at risk. And it's taking on that higher level of responsibility and commitment to being a good relative and keeping our communities safe. And that's a sacrifice that so many of us have had to make. And, you know, it's an opportunity to be creative. You know, we just ended our fourth virtual race that Rising Hearts has organized in the last 6 months to one, help raise funds for either Rising Hearts or some of the partner organizations that I collaborated with to support our program efforts. And much of it has been focused for the Mataquia Yasin COVID relief program, which Rising Hearts has been doing since June. And we've been, you know, purchasing and distributing masks to communities and individuals that have requested or those that need it, and procuring and getting face shields donated and having a couple of partnerships that we have with some of the distributors that make those face shields, as well as getting supplies, hand sanitizers and antibacterial wipes to the communities those that need it. And fundraising for other community programs that Rising Hearts is doing, like Indigenous Wellness Through Movement, which was founded during this pandemic as a way to help those, you know, needing to focus on their health and wellness, and creating free virtual classes that are Indigenous led by Indigenous instructors, voices and advocates in the wellness community, for everybody to learn from, to create and build community, as well as opening up these sessions to allies, because Rising Hearts is very, you know, passionate about being intersectional. So we also have classes that are coming from non-Indigenous communities being led. And so this is all part of the community building work, the heart work that people can learn from and be able to support, and just a variety of other initiatives that Rising Hearts has newly developed and created, which are going to be launching at the start of 2021.
So Jordan, you're actually, you're one of the first people we've brought on the podcast that wasn't a personal friend of myself or of Alyssa. And to be honest, we made this master list of like all of our dream people, and you were at the top. And this is inclusive of a lot of professional runners and coaches. So I guess, since I don't know you personally, and assuming some of our listeners don't follow you, can you kind of take us back? You said you're a fourth generation runner, but like, how did you become this amazing woman who is running this nonprofit, working, running professionally? Like, what, how did, I guess, take us back to the beginning of you getting into running and you finding your direction as this strong woman in your community?
I mean, I have to give all thanks and appreciation to my grandfather, Niall Brings. He passed away 4 years ago from cancer, but he is and was my role model and my superhero. And he took me on my run when I was 10 years old. And he introduced me to this community and to this, what at first began as a love-hate relationship with running, because he lived at the top of a hill and the first mile was downhill and the second mile was all the way back up. And I thought it was so awesome to run with him because he was a legend and everyone knew him as the runner and I knew him as the runner, and I felt like I was part of this cool club with him and my mom and my great grandpa and everything. And so I also still questioned, why is running fun? Like, especially since I had to run all the way back uphill. But it felt like this cool club that I got to be part of. And so I started running in elementary school, in middle school, high school, and eventually ran D1 at college at the University of Maine. Coach Mark Leck, who was absolutely incredible. So running started as a way for me to connect with my family and to continue this tradition and, I guess, legacy in our family and of Indigenous runners. And it evolved to eventually me finding my love for running for truly me and not with my family or about my family or having to feel like I need to continue this. And that changed in college. And then it became my outlet and my passion and just something that I truly connected with, and that it was something that was about me and was really committed to and wanting to do better and just exploring the trails more back in Maine and spending more time out there and going on longer runs and getting healthier and working through my eating disorder at that time and just having a better connection and a better relationship to running than I ever had before. And I finally felt like I reached that level of, you know, serenity and love that I saw my grandfather talk about it and my mom talk about it. And I finally felt like I achieved that and had that. And so then running was for me, and it was about also representation of Native athletes, Native runners. And at that time, you know, I looked up to Billy Mills, Alvina Begay, and just really was about wanting to see diversity in the running community, wanting to see Native runners on those magazines. I'd always dreamed of it, or wishing I could see my grandpa on it or somehow. And, you know, more recently, running has now changed for advocacy, for helping to give a platform to the issues that I care about, the people that I care about. And so all of this throughout this whole time, I've also known since eighth grade that I wanted to be an advocate. I wanted to be a voice and help create a better future. And for me in eighth grade, that was, I'm going to move to DC because that's where laws are made, and I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be the Indian Health Service director. I'm going to work in the government to make things better. And finally, that dream did come true in 2013. I was able to move to DC and started working for the National Indian Health Board as my first job. was out on the Hill lobbying. I interned for Congresswoman Shelley Pingree. I worked for myself simultaneously while trying to run for New Balance Pacers and Capital Area Runners and having my coach back in Boston. And then, you know, I had been on so many different teams, but luckily I had the same coach who, you know, really cared about my passions, my passion of running, but also my passion and devotion to my community and my relatives. So he was always very supportive and flexible, knowing that, you know, I'd have to run, but then quickly cut a run short because I had to go to a protest or a rally or some sort of event that was Native focused. And so grateful that I've had those kind of relationships with the coaches. But just advocacy has always been part of my life because I have been able to see in two different worlds as one, my indigeneity as a Lakota woman, trying to hold true and strong to my culture and who I am and how I was raised, and the other world of feeling like I need to conform, you know, to this society. Because, you know, I did face a lot of racism and ridicule growing up. I had moved away from my family and tribe and the community that I was raised in South Dakota to Maine, which is a very rural state. Some of them didn't know that they had 5 federally recognized tribes there. That's where I experienced a hate crime. And that's what gave me this perspective of I'm treated differently for my skin color. And for a good long time, it made me ashamed of who I was. And I hated the color of my skin. And I hated being Lakota and Native because of how society treated me. And it was just a constant struggle. And it was through college simultaneously as running was getting better and I was getting healthier. I reconnected back to my, you know, Indigenous roots and who I was and said, you know what, like, screw it. Other people think, like, I'm damn proud to be who I am and how I was raised and where I come from. And so then it was no more apologizing, no more feeling guilty or ashamed of who I was and my skin color. And it was just moving forward of being proud of who I am and why I want to advocate for my community. And so that's honestly what led me to DC and doing that work, which is where Rising Hearts was founded a couple years into it, and working with so many incredible Native organizations and trying to build community and build a better future and just be an advocate, a voice to speak to the great, but also some of the hardships that we have continuously experienced across all of our communities. And so I'm really grateful to have had that path and to have the family and the people that have supported me along the way to help support me in this journey, which has had a lot of ups, but I had some downs for some good long stretches. But I'm happy that, you know, I could overcome that and, you know, be where I am at, which I'm really grateful.
Oh, that's an incredible story, and really appreciate you sharing that journey with us. You've done, wow. Alex was just saying your resume is incredible, but it's funny how all the twists and turns take us to where we are. And speaking of that, you kind of brought it up.
Yeah, actually.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I actually texted Alyssa and said I'd like to vote for you for president. So
yeah, me too.
Put that out there. You have my vote.
But you said that you wanted to see your grandfather on a magazine cover, and you were on Trail Runner magazine's cover. How did that feel, and how was that received in your community and the greater running community? Is that's pretty awesome.
I mean, the responses that I saw were so great and so heartwarming. And, you know, it's part of the work that I do in trying to create these pathways for those that look like me or have had similar experiences to see themselves in these spaces. And, you know, while it is an incredible honor to be featured on Trail Runner and on Runner's World, it's not about me at all. Like, that win is not just for me. It's for my community. It's for my grandfather, who I wish could be here to see that with me and experience that. It's for Rosalie. It's for my cousins and nieces. It's for all of our communities to see us in those spaces that we do belong. Whether you're the world's fastest runner to just devoted to your community and trying to make the world a better place. And so it's an incredible honor. It's really weird to see. But yeah, it affirms me that, you know, the work that I'm doing, you know, it is seeing the outcomes that, you know, I've dreamt of. And hopefully we start seeing more Indigenous, Black, Asian, Two-Spirit, LGBTQ people with disabilities on those platforms as well. But yeah, it's beautiful. And to also for Runner's World, a neat story about that one. I had applied to like be in their contest back in 2014 for the cover. And as many were too, but it was just this big campaign where like Billy Mills like shared it and was like helping me get the support and the votes. And some of these just really like iconic runners in the community helping to share and give visibility to it. And sadly, I didn't get it. But, you know, now, what, 6 years later, I had the opportunity to be featured on the November, December issues with my Runner's World Alliance ambassador, you know, friends and allies there. And so I think they have 4 of our covers out there simultaneously, which is so great. And we're all coming from our own communities and advocating for, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion and justice and the things that we care about so much and how we can make the running community more safe and inclusive for those coming from these communities. And it's just an incredible, just an incredible opportunity for not just me, but for all of us, and hopefully for more to come.
And I'm so grateful that you're having this conversation with us, because like I said, most of the people we've had on so far, I have the luxury of calling friends. So you're doing us a huge favor, and it does not go without extreme gratitude. So I guess my last question on this kind of hard topic, and then maybe we can ask some just fun get to know you questions, but you've kind of touched on how companies can do better and how running magazines are starting to do better. But I guess my last question would be is how can we as, you know, white male or female runners in the ultra running and trail running communities make it a more inclusive space and make people feel more comfortable to show up, be at the group runs, be at the races, and not feel isolated? Because I can imagine, you know, I've shown up to a group run as the only female and felt really awkward. So I can't imagine throwing in another layer on top of that. And so I guess what can we do?
Yeah, I would just say coming with an open heart and an open mind and kind of being proactive, because we may be coming into these spaces as really shy and nervous just because of previous experiences that we've had. So just seeing someone who's willing to make that first step and in introducing themselves and saying, hey, I'm so and so, like, you know, what's your name? And just engaging that way and making it feel welcoming, because having that welcoming aspect can go a long way. In terms of, at least for me and those that I've shared conversations with about this, making us feel included and seen. There are so many different ways to improve it. But, you know, for me, something that I'm really excited to launch next month is the Running on Native Land initiative, where I'm developing a toolkit that's basically a how-to guide for running clubs, companies, race event directors, especially for when we have in-person races again, to use this toolkit and guide as a reference and how to implement land acknowledgements into these spaces. Because we need to start recognizing the true history of this country. We can't treat it as cafeteria food and pick and choose what we want to see and believe, which has, because of that, has led to a lot of erasure and has led to a lot of conflict that our communities are experiencing, especially with Indigenous and Black communities. And so we need to recognize that the lands we are on, you know, were stolen, and it was stolen through genocide and wars and disease and, you know, violence and rape and everything, boarding schools and all of that. And that this country was founded and built by enslaved Black folks. And we need to recognize this history. We need to learn more about it. And when we're runners and we're out on the trails, we're out on the roads, you're on Native land. We need to help reframe our perspective of the lands and how we connect to them. So this initiative will hopefully, one, get races to do land acknowledgments. But land acknowledgments are only the first step. Then you go another mile extra and you reach out to the Native communities nearby or in that state, and hopefully be able to work with Rising Hearts that will serve as kind of that connector, that networking arm to connect you with these communities. In donating a portion of the registration fees or portions of it to these communities or a specific program, and donating X amount of entry spots to Native runners, to Native athletes or walkers who want to participate so that they can feel welcomed and supported in these spaces. Through these land acknowledgments, having and inviting someone coming from those lands that is indigenous to them to give the land acknowledgement and opening prayer blessing before the race starts. And if they can't, they can receive a statement coming from someone from those lands or follow the guide and how to do a land acknowledgement. But this is all focused on community building and reframing our perspective of how we view the trails, how we view the roads, how we need to take better care of our lands and these spaces, because time and time again after races, I've seen some trash. Sometimes it gets missed or forgotten, whatever. But we need to have a better connection to it. And so hopefully this guide will also help push them to do more, to reach out to the communities, to get to know the communities that they're going to be running on, to also call for attention of the extra food that's left over or the clothes that get left behind, to donate those to food banks or to homeless shelters. And so this is all part of a step-by-step process that they can do, that they can take accountability and be proactive in their unlearning and relearning and their community building and creating allyship and in having a more inviting community, especially for Indigenous communities.
I think that's beautiful. I put on races here in Hawaii and all of our profits go back to a wildlife fund here. So it's a completely like nonprofit event, but, and we do land acknowledgements and I have invited, you know, Native Hawaiians to come out. But I've never would have thought to offer race entries or slot allowments for, so that you just blew my mind with that. That's an opportunity that I will, take that idea if that's okay with you. And I think that's a beautiful, like just in that, you know, 2 minutes, you taught me a lot as how as a race director I can do better. So I'm really looking forward to that guide.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't want to take away from our aspirations with running and wanting to win or win those prizes or get the fastest known time, but I feel like over time, as I've been having a better connection to my surroundings and to the community, I've seen kind of this self-entitlement within the running community that has often kind of isolated people and which has also made it so we don't feel included or supported. And I want this to be an initiative that helps kind of eliminate that, where running can still be for us and we enjoy it and it's something we're still passionate about, but it's also at the same time being supportive of the communities and part of that work. And it'll serve as kind of like decolonized diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, piece within the running communities that race and event directors can do. And luckily, one of my friends that I've been organizing these virtual races with, Elite Feats, I have a meeting with them, but hopefully they're going to be like the first official partner that organizes races. We'll start implementing land acknowledgments and implementing this toolkit when races start happening in person.
That's fantastic. I was hoping that Alex would jump in with the race director background, but I think it kind of goes back a lot to the fact of you can't separate running from politics. You can't separate what's happening in the world from running. It's all connected. And so we have to figure out or like place all the pieces together, and we're not just athletes, we're not just runners, we are all of these things. And I was thinking about, it's funny, when we first started talking, I was thinking about, wow, really, it's the racing on all of these different lands that's really where we need to be acknowledging it and spending time knowing where we are and the history behind it. So I'm so glad to hear that a guide is coming out and really excited to see it.
Yeah, me too. And the artwork is going to be great.
Oh, I bet. Well, Jordan, thank you so much for all the time. If you wouldn't mind, we have just a few fun questions to wrap things up. The first one is, and since I actually have not raced at all this year either, just from a safety standpoint, and what I personally think is the right decision for me. But next year, in the future, what's on your bucket list, race or FKT or adventure?
I honestly have no idea. I feel like everything I've signed up for so far and like has been rescheduled and postponed and rescheduled again. I'm just like, ugh, I don't want to get my hopes up because I'm hoping to do a lot of like the Spartan Trail series here in California, depending on how safe it's going to be. But I'm also organizing, another virtual race to launch the Running on Native Land initiative in January, and organizing another virtual race in May to simultaneously support the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, and to help fundraise for National Indigenous Women's Resource Center, and hosting a variety of conversations and panels that day to help give more visibility to this epidemic. Participating in the second prayer run for bears with the Salt Lake City Air Protectors that I did this September back from Bears Ears to Salt Lake City, 360 miles. So that's going to be happening again next September. And I was just recently invited to join in on a 500-mile prayer run in Northern California in June. But yeah, I think right now, as I'm slowly building and getting back into shape and getting healthier and hopefully more healed, just kind of jumping into the Spartan Trail race scenes, the 10K half marathons, and then hopefully, by the summertime, I can start getting into those longer distances. So I guess the schedule's fairly open.
And so my fun question is, because I think this always shows a little bit about people, is if you could go for a run or a workout or just spend an afternoon with anyone, dead or alive, is there anybody out there you would love to just have a time and a run with?
Mean, I'd have to say my grandfather.
I had a feeling that might be the answer, but that's awesome, Jordan. Well, Jordan, thank you so much again for all of your time and wisdom. And I'm really excited to share this episode when we release it. But where can people find you on social media or find these guides? How can we best connect with you?
Yeah, so people can follow me on Instagram at native in LA. Yeah. Underscore native in underscore LA. Sorry, got that confused. Or you can follow rising underscore hearts on Instagram. You can also contact me and learn more about me on my personal website, www.jordanmariedaniel.com. And the Rising Hearts website is also kind of hosted within my personal website, but hopefully on January 2nd, we're going to be launching the Rising Hearts website. Currently working on it right now, and that's where you're going to find more about the Running on Native Land initiative, the Running with Purpose community running team that is also going to be launching simultaneously, and all of the hard work that Rising Hearts is doing.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, and really look forward to seeing all of this information and following along with your journey.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate you, and really, really am appreciative of this opportunity to be a voice.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're so appreciative that you're willing to give us your time.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye.
Bye.